Hey everybody, Sarah Grillo here. Welcome back to my podcast. And I am thrilled because today I have Jocelyn Wright with me. Jocelyn, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I appreciate the invitation. Happy to be with you.
So Jocelyn is quite an accomplished person in our field. She is the founder and CEO of Ascension Wealth Management. I love seeing another female entrepreneur, especially one in our field. And in addition to that, she is a consultant to the American College. She works with them on their diversity initiative. And from what I can see, it looks like, Jocelyn, you've been in the industry for quite a long time with extensive experience before that. So great to have you. So tell me, Jocelyn, what are you working on nowadays that's meaningful to you in this diversity initiative?
There are a number of projects, certainly with the American College. One of the main projects that was started a little over a year ago is their effort to double the number of African-American financial advisors in the profession over the next 10 years. And it's called Double by 2027. Just came back from their annual conference of African-American financial professionals. And, over probably 600 advisors there, networking, hearing some great speakers, and getting some practical business information to help them continue to build their businesses. So that's one of the efforts that the college is doing. Also, continuing to do work around increasing opportunities for women in the profession, making them aware of that this is a career, a viable career, and creating opportunities for them to not only get into the profession, but how can they continue to grow and thrive in the profession. Because I think in a lot of cases, when we have these diversity initiatives, they miss the inclusion part. And I've heard it said many times before that you can't have diversity without inclusion. So that's really important that is a part of the equation, and that more opportunities are created to not only get women and other underrepresented groups in the profession, but keep them in their roles as well.
What does inclusion mean?
So inclusion can mean a number of things. Creating a work environment that is welcoming to underrepresented groups. So it could mean, particularly in the case of women and mothers, although it would also apply to fathers as well, is, if you have a standing 8 a.m. meeting that you
are mindful of. Oh, yeah, that's great for the mothers. That's great for the mothers, Jocelyn.
And any caregiver, it's important that employers are mindful that people have obligations that would prevent them from making that meeting. And, as opposed to saying that, oh, she's always late, finding out what the reasons are and adjusting the time. Make it where you're using technology. It could be a call in, or it doesn't have to be in person, but just being mindful of people's responsibilities outside of the office and, making being able to accommodate them. It's not, I often hear people say, well, you're making exceptions and, you're making it easy for them. No, that's not the case. You're not making it easy. You're just being mindful of what our day-to-day responsibilities are and allowing people to be able to, really be their true selves in the workspace.
Right. So is this applicable to the work that you're doing, Jocelyn? Are you specifically focused on financial advising, getting people into financial advising, from various backgrounds? Or, Jocelyn, is it for finance in general?
Well, in some cases, it's financial services in general, because, just being honest, we know not everyone might want to be a financial advisor. So we know that there are also a number of different roles that you can have in this profession, whether it's the, you know, the one-on-one, the personal client interaction as an advisor, but you could be someone who is an investment professional. So you're, you know, you're doing portfolios. You might be great at paraplanning and, you know, you are excellent at putting plans together. So although, you know, my role is as a planner, and that's the lane that I'm in, I just want to make more underrepresented individuals aware of all of the opportunities, and then they can pick which lane they want to, you know, to enter.
Mm-hmm. So how have you seen diversity? And what I love about the work that you're doing, Jocelyn, is that it seems like it's not just that you're coming at this from an outside perspective. You are a participant in the industry. You're not only an entrepreneur, but obviously a successful one. And so when you're trying to help people to succeed in the profession, you can tell that it's from experience, probably, that you're speaking a lot of times.
Right. Right. And it's definitely challenging, but, you know, each day is a learning opportunity and, you know, you work your way to where you want to be.
Tell me, how do you think diversity has been a factor in your own work at Ascension? Or has it been?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that question?
How has diversity worked in your own practice at Ascension? Have you been able to make it work for you? Or has it just not been something that's necessarily been applied directly to the work that you do?
Not necessarily, because I would say in many cases, the majority of my clients have been African American. And my niche is working with African American females. And that was intentional in many, you know, for the most part.
Why? I'm curious why.
Well, when I started in 2002, you know, I was a recent grad from graduate school, had just completed my MBA as a single woman, and I knew, you know, some of the issues and concerns that I had relating to finance, and other, you know, people in my peer group, friends that I had known going to college with, really in that same situation, you know, just beginning to navigate their careers and, you know, seeing some advancement, and just had many questions about what to do. So I was intentional about, you know, I don't see the industry really focusing on single women, particularly single Black women and the challenges that we face. So that is when, you know, I made it my, you know, that was my niche and who I was going to specifically seek out working with. Not to say that I won't work with others, but, you know, the profile of my client is a Black female professional.
Mm-hmm. Great. That is so wonderful. And so do you feel that it is, have you commonly found that African American women who are single prefer to work with somebody that is from a similar background to them?
I would say yes, and as do other people. I mean, we all like familiarity. So we like for people to have some sort of shared experience, whether it is, you know, background, ethnicity, gender. You know, it makes us more comfortable. Not to say that we wouldn't work with someone who was not, you know, a Black female. So I don't want to, you know, paint a broad brush that only single Black women want to work with people who have similar backgrounds. It's people in general.
Right. And I think that's a great way to help with your brand, though, you know, having the ability to understand what the specific challenges are that a particular demographic might have. That can really be very helpful for branding. But again, I like that you said that it doesn't have to be exclusive. It doesn't have to be that, oh, I work with the African American women, the single women. So if you're an African American woman who's married, you know, you're out of luck. I like
exactly.
I like that you are coming at it more from a position, it sounds like, of inclusion, of including that group, but including other groups as well, because how do you know that someone who maybe is not African American or is not single wouldn't have the same issues? For example, I know a lot of women who, and I remember one of my clients when I was an advisor was like this. She was married, but she's like, Sarah, my husband is totally not involved with this conversation. I'm the one that makes all the decisions. I'm not even going to consult with him on anything. So she was very much like a single mother, a single woman within the relationship.
Right. And specifically, when we talk about women, there are an increasing number of women who earn more than their spouses. So, you know, that's another issue, not another issue, another dynamic that needs to be factored in. So I've seen that personally and, you know, in other colleagues that I know who have, you know, situations like that, where the women are the primary breadwinners and the dynamics around that.
Oh, yeah. See, that is, I think, a situation where it would be so helpful if the advisor understood, because that gets into prenuptial, for example, right? Like if we're going to go and get married, how do I make sure that, you know, if women want that as an option, if the person wants that as an option, and it also, because what I have read, and this is just a statistic that I read somewhere, I can't even cite it, but it actually is terrifying. I don't actually know if this is a true statistic or if this is just something that people kind of make up. I mean, you read all kinds of things nowadays, okay? But I do remember reading somewhere that female, I guess, breadwinners, right? You may use that word, women who are out earning their husbands are like a certain magnitude a certain magnitude more likely to suffer from infidelity. And see, that's what the thing is, how can you even measure that? Because
right,
theoretically, if someone's cheating, that would kind of be something they would keep on the low and not go running
exactly
out to disclose to anyone that was taking a survey about it, because you just never know how confidential these things are. But yes, I did read that somewhere. I wonder if I can find that article, but that women are more likely to be cheated on if they're out earning.
Very interesting.
I know. So that's something that it would be so helpful to have a single woman that had been in that position that could understand, or a married woman, or just any woman that could understand that kind of a thing. Cause that also is something that can be a little bit hard to talk about, even within your own relationship.
Right. And, you know, for financial advisors, myself included, you know, you quickly learn that the conversations that you have with your clients are well beyond just about money. So you begin talking and learning a lot about them. And that's why I think the client planner relationship is so important, because you really are, you know, bearing a lot. If you're being, you know, open and authentic, you know, you're sharing a lot of very personal information, and you get to see, you know, just the dynamics when you're meeting with a couple, you know, checking body language, all of those things, you know, certain comments that are made to really kind of see what the relationship is like when you're dealing with couples.
Yeah. I mean, it goes so far beyond finance. I feel as if finance is just, I mean, it's important and you got to know your game, but the connection, the emotions, the spirituality even of it, of the what is going on psychologically in their head, the energy, all of that is so important to the connection.
Right. And that's one of the things where we say that women would make great advisors, because of the fact that we do on average have a very good ability to create relationships, to, you know, read that body language and see when someone's getting uncomfortable and, you know, begin to ask questions. You know, what was that about? What does that mean? You know, is there something more to what you just said? And that's really important, because at the end of the day, you know, the technical part is great to know, but the relationship is really what makes everything stick, is the glue that keeps it all together.
Yeah, totally agree with you on that. So before we wrap here, Something you said was very interesting about doubling the number of African Americans in the profession, something that you're working on right now.
Yes.
Can you tell me, for those who might be listening to this podcast, what are some things that you have found to be effective? Maybe one or two things. I'm sure there's a whole slew of things that you're doing to help, but what would you say are the one or two things that are the most effective or most important to really, you know, really cause these results?
One would be, we found that mentorship is very important. Mm-hmm. You know, creating opportunities, this goes for African Americans and other underrepresented groups, as well as women. You know, research has shown that having a mentor, more than one, is very helpful in that process of, you know, retaining them and keeping them in their roles. Granted, they may change companies, but, you know, just keeping them as financial advisors, that's very important. Another thing, and this becomes a very touchy conversation when it comes to financial advisor roles, is the pay structure. We have to find opportunities where it's beyond just, you know, commission, that, you know, you only make money when you close a case. Finding more opportunities and making prospective advisors aware of opportunities where you actually have a salaried role. So you're not so consumed with, I need to close this case because I have student loans, I have a mortgage to pay, I have a car payment, those sorts of things. And that can be helpful in making more people look at this as a profession, not that you're, you know, that you're not just being a salesperson. And when we're talking about, you know, students coming into it, that's really important, because there are, you know, gatekeepers that are in the way of our profession and students, mainly professors, also, you know, their parents. So if the professors mm-hmm. and parents think that their, you know, that their student, their child is going to be entering a profession that, you know, it's eat what you kill, that's not something that they wouldn't necessarily encourage, because they know many of the challenges that students face with student loans. The cost of living is much more expensive. So they really want them to be in a position where there is a salary that they can expect, you know, on the 1st and the 15th, or whatever the pay schedule is, you know, so that, you know, they can get out of their homes and, you know, be successful. Or in the case of an educational institution, that they can, you know, earn a good salary and begin to give back to, you know, the institution mm-hmm. that provided them that education. Mm-hmm. There is, and I'm completely drawing a blank on his name, but the University of Akron, a professor there, Professor Mulholland, he mm-hmm. does a great thing where it's called in a day of inviting the influencers, so influencing the influencers. So he invites professors, guidance counselors, and even parents to make them aware of what a financial advisor is, what it means, what we do. And that way you're creating, you're one, getting rid of some of the myths, the negative stereotypes about our profession, and providing them an opportunity to ask questions. And then hopefully at the end of the day, you have created an environment where you have individuals who now can be helpful to you as you try to, you know, go out and get more young people into this field, because we all know that, you know, the average age is over 50. There are more advisors, you know, who would be retiring or getting out of the profession than there are entering. So if we are serious about continuing to want to serve and provide financial advice for clients, we need to have more in the pipeline.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I think it can be such a roadblock to the profession, because what you have is, because of the compensation, I think that is a real issue. I mean, and not that lack of mentorship or lack of proper mentorship isn't as well, because I've also had that myself. I had a mentor that, not saying any names, but just, you know, just wasn't doing it for me. And I was a little bit bashful about saying that. I think I definitely should have, because I would have been more successful. But for the compensation part, I mean, if you're a mother, I remember when I had this one financial advisor job that, you know, I was great at getting leads, and a lot of people, you know, I remember my bosses were like, oh my gosh, you're going to be like the next, you know, 800-pound gorilla in the space. You know what? It takes time to close the transaction, and you can't, you can't force it. So even if you're out there with the high activity level, I mean, I guess theoretically, if you're, what I like to say is if you're generating 3 viable prospects a day, if you go by those numbers, eventually you're going to be successful within a few months. You're going to be able to pay your bills. It does. I mean, you can mess up like 90% of your opportunities and you're still going to be able to pay your bills if you look at mathematically how that would work. But at the same time, I think it's very difficult when you've got this stress on you, you've got pressure and expectations from everybody looking at you like, I hope you don't fail out of this profession. You know, within 3 months, so many people fail out of those broker intro roles, you know, like in those programs. They have such a high turnover. And then second of all, you know how hard it is, like how much pressure it really is when you've got rent to pay and this and that, and you can't, you're learning. And maybe also you don't know the most about prospecting. I mean, even myself, it was only recently that I learned how to really get that pipeline full and how to use all opportunities to make it even worse. Here's another thing. At a lot of these broker-dealer firms, you're cut off from online marketing.
Right.
And that's how I met you, for example, right? Like, that's how opportunities are created. That's how I've met so many clients of mine. Like, I would say at this point, over 90% of my clients, I have not even met face-to-face.
Interesting.
And that had come to me through something over the internet rather than me cold calling or meeting from networking. Most of the time, it's that. So, you know, the broker-dealer model, I feel, is at odds with that.
Well, they're very, you know, they take a long time to get up to speed with how technology is changing and things are changing. And that leaves, you know, the professional at a disadvantage because, you know, they have not blessed it or put in the time and money that's required to really examine that particular, you know, social media, that they can't use it. So it's challenging. And when you talk about people failing out of the business, I wouldn't necessarily even say that they fail out of the business. They can't afford to stay in the business.
They can be doing
the right things, but they don't have, you know, the time to do it. And there are so many additional layers to that when you talk about, you know, women, minority women as well, and minorities, because some of their financial challenges can be different. You know, you think about students. So you have more women, they say, have a greater rate of student loans. Minority women have even higher. So, you know, there are levels to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, the need to really hit the ground running is very challenging, and you don't want someone, you know, who may be, you know, again, feeling forced to make a sale and closing a deal, knowing that, you know, with the pressure of having to pay bills. That's also a challenge when we think of career changers coming into the profession as well. So if someone, you know, has spent 20 years in a role, obviously they are at a certain level. So they have a certain lifestyle and an income expectation. So then giving them this opportunity of, oh, you can make so much, but it is eat what you kill. That's hard to, you know, get an experienced person from the standpoint of career experience, not necessarily experience in this field. But, you know, then
unless they were an entrepreneur. If they were an entrepreneur, that's one thing. But if you have not been an entrepreneur, I mean, you really have to gain an entire skill set, and that's so stressful. Like, you're starting from ground zero.
It is a different animal than, you know, working, you know, having someone, you know, getting a paycheck. It's a very different animal. So, you know, we have to be mindful of that if we want to attract, you know, those individuals.
Yeah. So, hey, look, Jocelyn, I'm so sorry I've taken up more time than I intended, but the conversation.
Oh, not at all.
I really appreciate you being on my show, Jocelyn. Thank you. And I also am very grateful. And I just want to say to all of you advisors who maybe are looking to take on other advisors into your practices, I think that I would really appreciate it if you could listen to Jocelyn's words and take her wisdom into account when you're creating your plan and creating a model that would be more agreeable to more diversity, which I think can benefit us all, clients, practitioners, and everyone in the industry. So Jocelyn, thank you so much, everybody. And please
rate. My pleasure.
Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Okay, that's it. Bye, everybody.